like to invite you to listen to some other shows here on Real Liberty Media. We have Behind the Woodshed, evolutionarily engaging in counter-propaganda tactics and related work with Hal Anthony. We also have It's All Connected with Grimner and Circle. They connect all the dots. The subject doesn't matter. The connections are real and tangible. Also, we have Free Your Mind with Grimner and Moose Girl. You can break from thought constraints on the scope of your vision only by realizing those limits that have been presented to you do not apply to you. They are not real. Those concepts make people feel comfortable by giving them thought memories. This is the Free Your Mind show with Moose Girl and Grimner. Sit back and listen and see your way beyond the world as it has been defined. We have A Pondergander with Vinny. To Think and Reason, Raising Expectations Through Thought-Provoking Episodes. If you cannot do great things, do small things in a great way. On Sundays, you can sit back and relax and enjoy some music from Grimner. He broadcasts the Sunday Blues Show live on Sundays from noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. He plays all kinds of blues, from great oldies like Robert Johnson, Howlin' Wolf, and John Lee Hooker to the most modern hard-rocking blues from Joe Bonamassa, Poppy Chubby, and Samantha Fish, and all the stuff between, like Stevie Ray Vaughan, Jack Bach Project, and Gary Moore. He also plays blues music from classic rock bands, the Rolling Stones, ZZ Top, and Cream. And while he's playing the music, we are in the Real Liberty Media chat on irc.freenode.net playing a rousing game of trivia. So come on over and join us every Sunday for some great tunes, fun trivia, and great chat. We also have a show, The Top 10 Countdown. Gary L. and Gigi's Boo play the top 10 songs from years gone by, and they provide some interesting historical facts and trivia about the songs and the era. These are all great shows with great content and inspiring messages. Come spend some time with us. Get to know us, and we will get to know you. Also, if you love what you hear and want to represent, we have Real Liberty Media here. You will love the artwork and it will inspire conversation. Check out our Amazon.com store and Real Liberty Media goods from our website, reallibertymedia.com. Good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, where you are and when you're listening. This is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist. I love Saturdays, man. The whole preparation thing, getting ready for the show. Of course, I always have stuff to do before I can get ready for the show. But it's always fun when I get to sit down and kick this thing off. I have a friend, not really a friend. It's my son-in-law's mom wants to come over and see how this happens. But she's not here today. But Bear and Pebbles are here. They're kind of playing around in the man cave home studio. So if you hear them, that'll be cool. I know Bear made an appearance last week. Oh, and by the way, I put up a video, a second drone video. I had a little bit better weather this morning. So I put up a drone video of the property clearing. So if you're interested in that, it'll be in the show notes. Hey, I hope if you're listening, you check out the Real Liberty Media chat room. Join us over here in the chat when we're live. Even probably pretty much any time of the day, you can come on to Real Liberty Media and check out the chat room. Somebody will be in the chat. Seems like there's always somebody there, and if not, check back later. But people are always willing to chat, and I think just such great, I really love Real Liberty Media, and I'm glad to be a part of it, but people, oh boy, I might have to break those two up. I asked him if he wanted to be on the show today. I guess his answer was yes. Anyway, great minds here at Real Liberty Media. I mean, if you want to learn some stuff, it's a good place to come. If you want to listen to people who really think well, I mean, there are some great shows here. And you'll hear stuff that you won't hear, other places. And I think that really kind of sets us apart. I think people refer to the mainstream media as legacy media. And, man, you hear the same thing over and over again, and you don't, you only hear the stuff that kind of like the AP and the governments of the world want you to hear. But you come on to Real Liberty Media, you're going to hear all kinds of stuff, great stuff, too. So a couple updates for this week. The ARS radio control rock crawler build that I've been working on is going to be finished here in the next, 48 hours. I'm really looking forward to it. The body kind of took the longest time, because I had to paint it several coats of paint. And then you got to put all the little accessories on. And then, but I did run the chassis after I got the electronics installed. I think that was last week. And man, that thing, probably because of the stuff I put in it, really good motor, electronic speed control, and a steering servo. Anyway, they're all pretty high quality pieces. So it runs really good. I can't wait to put the body on it and get some video of that too. That'll be cool. Let's see. Oh, the other thing, man, this is crazy. I mean, here it is, June 12th. And in Oregon today, I put the weather up on the chat room. And, it's only 70-something degrees here today, but it is so humid. So there's this kind of river of rain coming at us. But ahead of that river of rain is just this humidity that's come in. And today it's cleared up. Like, it rained all day yesterday and it was kind of cool. But today it cleared up, kind of. I mean, there's some really high overcast, but it is so muggy. Like, outside, I was outside just 30, 20 minutes ago, and it felt sticky and humid and just kind of yucky. But this is a crazy thing. Tomorrow, we're supposed to get anywhere between, 0 and 2 inches of rain. Like, 2 inches of rain in Oregon. Kind of crazy. Only on the western side of Oregon, though. Really the western, kind of the coastal area. Like, from Interstate 5 west. So that'll really help out because, it's been dry. Kind of one of those years on and off rain, but not quite enough to get us in the normal range. So I'm kind of looking forward to, heavy rains tomorrow. That'll be kind of fun. Okay, so yesterday, Moose Girl said something to me about mentioning me on the show because I use the term vaccine. And I was thinking about this. And she's right about using that term. And I had another kind of something that bugged me in my past that made me totally understand this idea. So I'm going to try and really make that switch and not call that jab a vaccine. But here's how I came to my understanding. I don't really care what people call it. But the point is, if it's not a vaccine, you shouldn't call it a vaccine. And one of my arguments in the past is, just because you say something over and over and over again doesn't mean that that's the truth. I mean, you can tell a lie over and over and over, it's still a lie. Even though, having people hear it over and over and over again, eventually they'll accept it. But here's the thing that bothered me in the past. So I've probably smoked like most of my life, and then I went to vaping in 2014. And when I went to vaping, as with everything I do in my life, I kind of study it, you know, things before I do them, or if I'm doing them, I study them enough to, you know, become, you know, be able to talk about them in an intelligent way, or at least I hope in an intelligent way. And so when I started vaping, I would hear people talk about the smoke from the vape, and I would constantly tell them, it's not smoke, it's vapor. And sometimes, especially, I don't know if you've ever been around somebody who vaped and who really got into vaping. Like, it's kind of like I'm one of those people that anything I do, I kind of go to the extreme, kind of like the RC rock crawler right now. I'm kind of into that. So, of course, I'm spending a lot of time and money doing it and learning about it. And that's why I built one, is so I could see how all the parts work in it. But anyway, back to the vaping. So when you generate a gigantic cloud of vapor when you're vaping, and I don't mean these little cheap electronic cigarettes. I mean like the big vaping rigs. That's what I have. I really love them because it actually feels like you're getting a lung full of smoke when you're actually getting a lung full of vape. And it used to really piss me off when people would say, oh, your smoke is getting in my face, like if I happen to vape around anybody. And I would constantly tell them, it's vape. It's not smoke. It's vape. And no matter how much you call it smoke, it's not smoke. It's vape. And I would eventually tell people something like this. Hey, have you ever been to a concert? Yeah. Have you ever been in the, you know, stage fog that they use? Yeah. Okay, that's vapor. It's stage fog. It's the exact same thing that you use in vape. So, Moose Girl brought that, you know, to my attention sort of by having it on her show. And it was a great show, by the way. Grimner and Moose Girl, good job. So I'm gonna abandon that whole vaccine term, except when I'm reading news references, because I have a few of them in the stack today. So let's see, I should take care of that. Anyway, yeah, thanks, Moose Girl. And it's not a vaccine. I got that. So let's move on. Let's see what the jab is doing this week. You know, it's kind of funny. I want to try and avoid... No, I guess I don't. I was going to say I want to try and avoid COVID news, but really I don't. And I guess the reason is because, you know, now we're into the kind of next phase of COVID where we're actually finding out what, number one, the jab does, what COVID actually does. And I got a question. Hey, do you guys hear that computer sound coming over? Because if you do, I want to cut it off, and I got to see where I cut it off. I don't know. I'll find it in a minute. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh, COVID news. Yeah, this stuff keeps coming up. And so now we're in this different phase where we're actually learning all the horrible side effects of getting the jab, and we're finding out, you know, what and if there truly is a virus. And this is what I was going to ask. I don't know if any of you guys could answer this, but if you can, just leave a note. I do have the air conditioner on, sorry, but I guess I can turn it off in a minute or something. So if they haven't actually isolated the COVID virus, how could they know that there are variants? I mean, doesn't it seem weird to you? And I think I even talked about this before when, I don't know, some sewers in Texas were being tested for you know, COVID variants. And I was like, how in the hell do they do that so fast? And I think I even said at that time, because some virologists actually say that they haven't isolated the COVID virus properly yet. So it's strange to me that they keep talking about these variants. And, you know, how could they know what a variant is if they don't even know what the actual original virus was? Although, I don't know. I'm going to have to go back and kind of research how they came to that conclusion so that maybe we can all figure this out together. So, I did want to bring up another banned topic that has been proven to be true. So, the university, oh, I got to figure out which university this is. What an idiot. I didn't put it in my notes. Let me see. Okay, well, here's the bottom line. This university, I think it was in Australia. Okay, now we're going to have to go pull this up. Hang on a minute. Just hang on a minute. I could sing, but that would probably drive a lot of people away. Okay, here we go. It says, no bats or pangolins sold in Wuhan wet market, Oxford Research says. Neither bats nor pangolins were being sold in wet markets in Wuhan when CCP, the Chinese Communist Party virus pandemic, started, a study by Oxford University found. And what's interesting about this is that they just happened to, let's see, the university said its wildlife conservation research unit happened to have been working with its China-based colleagues in gathering data collected from across Wuhan's wet markets through May 2017 and November 2019 to study a different disease. The study put the team in the right place at the right time to document the wild animals sold in these markets in the lead up to the pandemic, Professor David McDonald, director of Wild Crew, said in a statement. The study, published by Nature Journal on Tuesday, so that would be probably last Tuesday, said the team documented 47,381 individuals from 38 species sold as pets or for human consumption, including badgers, raccoon dogs, hedgehogs, peacocks, reptiles, but no bats or pangolins. Bats are actually rarely consumed in central China, where market photos generally depict Indonesia. Pangolin trade is still a significant issue in other Chinese cities and trading nodes, but not in Wuhan. By the way, I think pangolins are, not that this matters to some other countries, but I think they're protected and not supposed to be sold in markets. So, but kind of interesting that, you know, before and probably still to this day, although we won't test it because we don't use, you know, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, whatever. But, you know, bats and pangolins, who I guess were suspect of being the intermediary between the virus and humans, weren't being sold during that entire time. So, you know, another domino falls in the whole, natural transition story. Obviously, this is all going to come down to that it came out of that lab. I don't think there's any doubt about that. It's just that we got to go through all these ridiculous motions before we get to the bottom line and get to the truth. But it is coming out slowly but surely. Unfortunately, you know, people are suffering because of the virus, I guess, maybe. I suppose, Yeah, I guess there's still people dying from COVID, air quotes, COVID. And people are dying from the jab still. We had people in... Oh, this week I know a few people have seen this already. Federal authorities have received over 800 reports of heart inflammation in people who have received a jab. A health official said on Thursday, the reports of myocarditis and pericarditis were submitted to the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, which is a passive reporting system run jointly by the Center for Disease Control and Prevention and the Food and Drug Administration. Most of the reports describe myocarditis or pericarditis appearing in people ages 30 or younger. Now, just think about that. So these 500 people, number one, didn't need the vaccine because the worst is going to happen to them is death, but the possibility of that is so minuscule. And then they go get the jab and they end up being, getting this myocarditis. Who knows? We don't know what the long-term effects of these injections are going to be. We're just finding out slowly but surely. But 30 years old and younger, getting myocarditis and pericarditis. So myocarditis is inflammation of the heart and pericarditis is inflammation of the lining around the heart. So, they didn't have that before. So, didn't really benefit them to get the jab. And, did it protect them from anything? Did it protect them from COVID, which they didn't need protection from in the first place? Kind of sucks. But it goes on. I mean, this is just the beginning. What is this? A few months after we've had the jab available. Let's see. Checking the chat. Make sure everything's good. Looks like it is. Let's see. What else happened? 800. Oh yeah, heart inflammation. Oh, and another death in Australia. The Therapeutic Goods Administration says benefits of the AstraZeneca vaccine far outweigh the risks after a woman died from a blood clot in the brain in the state of New South Wales. Well, it didn't outweigh the risk for her. That's for sure. She was only 52. She was among four new clotting cases linked to the vaccine. And it says the other three involved a 77-year-old man, a 70-year-old man, and an 87-year-old South Australian woman. And there are also four other cases with a probable link. So, this is what happens when you rush some health solution to the population without having those long-term studies, those long-term effect studies that, I guess sometimes we complain about, other medications taking so long to get into the population to become available, especially if you're somebody who's suffering with some ailment and there's a medication out there, but it takes 10 to 15 years to get it approved by the FDA, and yet you could benefit from it because it has been shown to be safe, just not fully through the verification process yet. I would complain. I mean, it seems like there is too much bureaucracy a lot of times, too much bureaucracy in getting some medical solutions into the hands of people who really need it. And other times, you know, this is just like, this was ridiculously fast. And I don't know if you guys kind of checked out that SPARS pandemic scenario that I posted last week, but I mean, it is crazy. More and more people are finding that. And I think it was even, no, I don't think it was taken down. I mean, I was still able to use it because I downloaded it, but I heard Event 21 or Event 201, Event 201 was taken down. But wow, really interesting scenario that kind of played out. I mean, that scenario was published, I think, like, I think they started working on it in, I don't know, 2017 or 18, I don't know, a few years ago. But they actually posted the results of that whole scenario acting out business just before this pandemic went live, basically. So, and I mean, talking about the pandemic being scripted, that SPARS pandemic 2025 to 2028, really, yeah, just, it's worth a read. I'll have to check and see if it's still available. Let me go do that right now while we're live. I think I have a link for it right here. Let's see. If it comes up, oh yeah, it's still there. So that link's going to still be available. I'm going to leave it in the show notes for this week in case people missed it in the past. You can go check it out. The next topic on my agenda, let me see, did we cover all the deaths? Oh my goodness. You know, and this myocarditis and pericarditis, I'm sure that's not going to be the only thing. I mean, we've already seen, you know, the blood clots that have killed people, you know. God, and the other thing is, like, why in the hell do we have our kids, you know, getting this jab? That part I understand the absolute least. Like, they have the most minuscule chance of dying from COVID, and yet the hype is to get, you know, kids vaccinated, jabbed. And I just don't understand why people are so eager to do it. But I guess in one way I could see that people get tired of the lockdown and they think that, you know, by following along, by getting the jab, they're gonna, you know, speed up the, you know, back to normal process. And I just don't think that that's going to happen. Well, that's not true. I guess eventually we, you know, the tyrants who are in charge now are going to let us get back to normal. But, you know, I guess they're just trying to see how many people will follow along, you know, get in line and do what they're telling them to do. But I am glad to see so much resistance now. I don't know if they're ever going to get to whatever number it is that they want to get to. But I am glad to see people resisting it more and more. And I didn't, of course. I guess, you know, if you have listened to the show before, you know I got the jab months ago. We'll see what happens. I'm waiting for the next thing, that's for sure, you know. Maybe this 2025 to 2028 scenario is going to play out in 2025. And who knows, they'll blast a bunch of us with whatever, who knows what's next. Oh, this is, I really wanted to talk about this. So, you know, a couple weeks ago I was talking about how a bunch of counties in Oregon voted to just be switched over to Idaho. Basically, they want to leave Oregon for Idaho. And I was thinking about this because also there's a few counties in Northern California who want to do that also, which would make Idaho this gigantic state. And I'm old enough to remember that And there was actually a campaign here in Oregon 30, 40 years ago that kind of welcomed Californians to come and visit and then go home, because there was this kind of mass migration from California to Oregon going on at the time, because, you know, people were tired of California. The taxes were getting so high, property values or costs of owning and buying property were so high. It was, you know, the cost of living was so high that people just didn't, they wanted to come to Oregon because it was, you know, much, I guess, cheaper, lower cost of living. But here's what happened. And here's what's going to happen, probably, to Idaho, too. Because right now, it feels like it's mostly conservative people who want to get the hell out of Oregon, because Oregon absolutely sucks politically. And I think it's pretty obvious if you just look at what the governor's done for since this, you know, COVID thing has happened. And, you know, with no pushback whatsoever from the other people in her party, they just allow her to assume this massive amount of power and just, you know, emergency power us to death, basically. But this is what I fear is going to happen is, and what happened here in Oregon is a great example. And that is the morons from California who wanted to escape, you know, what they didn't like about California, came to Oregon and then made Oregon just like California, and maybe worse. No, it's obviously worse. Well, I can't say it's obviously worse. I really don't know how bad California is, but I can tell you how bad it is here in Oregon. And what I fear is, of course, it'll take a while. I mean, what'd it take? Probably 10, 15 years to convert Oregon. I mean, it was already kind of headed that way in the first place. I remember being in college, so what was that, 80? Yeah, in 1980. And, you know, trying to constantly keep from being influenced by, all the propaganda that was going on campus at the time, no matter what it was, whether it was about war or environment or, you know, gender, sexual preference, whatever it was, I really just wanted to go to college, get an education, and move on to whatever it was going to be next. And just seeing the big change, you know, happen with Californians rolling in here, it didn't take too long, you know, to kind of make Oregon what they had in California, you know. And there was enough people here who were already going down that road that it didn't take long at all to establish, you know, it's just a gigantic Democratic state right now. And they even booted a Republican out. Mike Nierman, he was he a representative or a senator? I don't know. He's even in my whatever area, district, region, whatever you want to call it. And he supposedly let people come in the Capitol when it was locked down during the COVID. And I don't know if they caused some damage or, you know, bear sprayed cops, or I don't know what exactly they did, but the rest of the government voted him out, so he's ousted, and they're gonna, and he was a Republican, that's why I was bringing that up. It's kind of funny, but there's a whole argument over whether, there's just this whole argument that if you're okay, Oregon has, you know, a constitution, and it says that, you know, you have to have the Capitol open so that citizens can come and see, you know, lawmakers in action, and that you can't make any laws and you can't conduct business without an open Capitol. Well, now the Capitol's been locked down for, I don't know, months, year, something, and you know, they're still conducting business, which pretty much violates the Constitution of Oregon. But it doesn't seem to matter. It doesn't matter. Trust me, it doesn't. It's all political stuff, and like I said, there's one party who have massive control here, and that's what the whole move was about. All these counties leaving Oregon is because basically three cities in Oregon control the politics in the entire state, and all the rest of Oregon is, you know, pretty, you know, down to earth, like blue collar people, you know, farmers and homesteaders and country folks that just want to live their lives and, you know, not have so much interference. And that's just not the way it is. So anyway, I kind of lost my train of thought there. It doesn't matter. It's not important. All right. Hey, so I found a couple interesting articles I wanted to talk about. These are more along the biology line. I think it's kind of cool. It's also a little bit scary, but not really. It's not. It's interesting to me. So this there's this Arctic critter. It's called a rotifer. I'm not really sure how small it is. I don't know if it's microscopic, a rotifer. Yeah, I bet it's pretty dang small. But anyway, so this one company that does like these Arctic cores where they drill out a core of ice and then they study all the different layers of the ice, they thawed out this Arctic rotifer after it had been frozen for 24,000 years. And once they thawed it out, the rotifer, which belongs to the genus Adineta, was able to reproduce in a clonal process known as parthenogenesis. To follow the process of freezing and recovery of an ancient rotifer, the researchers froze and then thawed dozens of rotifers in the lab. Now, what's kind of crazy about that is I've said before, like 95% of all species that have ever lived are extinct. They've gone extinct. Now, I guess you couldn't really say that this critter has gone extinct because it was probably just waiting for the next global warming cycle to thaw it out so it could come to life again. Well, actually, life again, you know, not in this state of suspended animation or coma or whatever it is you would call it. It was frozen. It was frozen solid for 24,000 years. And then, you know, thawed out and starts reproducing again. But, so my point is, okay, well, it was frozen in the Arctic for a reason. Because that's where it, you know, prefers to live and reproduce. And now it's reproducing in a lab. And who knows what they're going to do with it next, you know. Like, I always imagine they're going to put it on some kind of a, you know, museum or a zoo or God knows what, and, you know, making an example of bringing things back to life. But kind of along those lines, I was looking at some other things that maybe we, you know, maybe we could bring back to life that have been frozen for a long time. And you'll see this in the show notes, too. I thought it was kind of interesting. And actually, I'd seen each of these critters, stories, when they first came out. But it is kind of a cool collection. There's a mammoth that was frozen solid. And now these critters are not fossilized critters. These are critters that still have flesh and blood and cells and DNA and organs. They're fairly intact. So definitely kind of going along the Jurassic Park idea, you could grab some DNA from these critters and clone them, you know, and like bring them back to life on Earth. But why would you? You know, like, it would, of course, cost a ton of money to bring these critters back and having them roam the Earth again. I mean, I think it would be kind of cool to see some giant woolly mammoth with those giant tusks roaming the whatever, wherever the, I think they were kind of northern climates, like Alaska. I know they found some in Alaska and Canada. And I think, you know, some pretty much, I don't want to say Arctic Circle, but up north, you know, up where it's cold a lot of the year. Anyway, so mammoths, that would be cool. There's a critter called a woolly rhino that they found, also frozen, that still has tissues that, you know, contain DNA. And, I mean, that's the deal. DNA is the deal. You know, if you can get a hold of something's DNA, you can pretty much clone it. No, there's no pretty much about it. You can clone something if you have its DNA. And of course, you can GMO it, you know, where you can add, well, guess what, virus DNA in it and bacterial DNA. So you can combine all these, you know, different aspects or different characteristics from other critters into, you know, these critters and bring them back to life and maybe make them, I don't know, probably, I was going to say better in some way, but I don't really believe we make it better. We just make it different. So woolly rhino, a cave lion, that would be kind of cool. Nobody really knows what a cave lion looks like, apparently. But this one critter is either a cave lion or a lynx. They're not sure. Because I guess it was a lynx cub or a cave lion. But because they don't know what a cave lion looked like, they can't really say which one of those two it is. Also, a mammoth calf was found, an ancient bison. That'd be cool. They're kind of cool looking because it looked like they have pretty big horns. And a colt, a foal, I mean. So an ancient horse. Anyway, that would be kind of cool to see some of those things. Some of those things be brought back to life, but why? You know, they had their time on this earth, and they didn't survive. And they didn't survive for a reason. So, and the reason was because they couldn't adapt to whatever was going on in the environment at the time. And this was far before the Industrial Revolution and global warming or global cooling. Well, apparently it was maybe during global cooling, since they were all frozen. So maybe they couldn't adapt. And what's crazy about that is like at least three of those things were actually made for extremely cold climates. All right. Well, oh, we have more inflation indicators. I noticed this, and I've been talking to some of my friends about this stuff for a long time. Especially this used car and truck prices soared 7.3%. That was really kind of interesting because I'd had actually, I know I mentioned that I bought a used truck about, oh, I don't know, 3 months ago. And, man, I bought it just in time because it was right before these prices started to increase. And it was before the, you know, computer chip shortage kind of reduced the availability of new trucks. But anyway, like, I bought that truck just in time. And then all of a sudden, the used car prices started going up. And you couldn't, and actually, even at the time when I was looking for that for a truck, I kind of looked at new ones, and there wasn't a very good availability because of that dang computer chip shortage, and they're not shipping as many new trucks right now, or then when I bought this used one. But actually, I'm really glad I got the used one because, you know, used, you don't pay that premium off the top, you know, overpay for a new rig and have that, you know, equity loss right off the bat. So, and plus it's an awesome truck. It looks nice. It's got that Power Stroke diesel in it, 6.7 liter. It's fantastic. But anyway, let's see, consumer prices surged in May at the fastest annual rate since August of 2008. The consumer price index in May increased 5% year over year, higher than the 4.7% increase that was expected. Prices saw a 0.6% increase month over month, also above the 0.4% increase that analysts surveyed by who cares. Anyway, it says energy prices remained the same from the month prior as a decline in gasoline prices was offset by a rise in natural gas and electricity costs. That's kind of strange. Well, we're going to see it definitely. It's just a matter of time before we see that increase in energy prices. And, you know, that's why I like to talk about being prepared. And Moose Girl said also a couple weeks ago, I don't even know if it's in this chat, might have been in a different chat. She said, mentally preparing is a huge part of being prepared. And I agree. Wow, up 30%. Gas is up 30%. Yeah. Yeah, it sucks. I am glad I'm riding the Harley this time of year. You know, $8 a month, I think I put in that thing to get to work and back. But I'll make up for it when I'm driving that big diesel truck. But right now it's fun because, you know, I don't spend hardly any money on fuel. Well, let's see what else we got here. Oh, hey, botulism. As if we don't have enough to worry about. And I think this was mainly in New Mexico I saw this. Although, you know, this is not like some kind of an epidemic or... I don't even know. I think I hit on this because it's... To me, it's kind of unusual to see botulism. What was that other thing? Oh, yeah, the plague. What is that one plague from rats or mice or rodents? Bubonic plague. It always kind of gets my attention when I see a bubonic plague case show up. And I guess because, you know, the bubonic plague was such a big deal in the past, you know, and it killed a ton of people. So when I see, and I mean, I know that there is bubonic plague here in Oregon. You know, I think the rabbits in eastern Oregon or some rodents in eastern Oregon that people like to hunt, you can get the plague. Of course, not from the critter. It actually is a bacteria, and I think it's Yersinia melanogaster. I could be wrong about that, but I'm fairly certain that that's what it is. And it's on, it's carried by fleas that are on the rodents, not by the rodents. But it is kind of interesting so when I saw this case about botulism, I mean, normally we relate that with, you know, home canning problems. And, I saw this story and I was like, oh, I don't even know. It's called wound botulism. And I'm going to give you just a little bit of a background on wound botulism first, and then I'm going to talk about this case, these cases that have shown up in New Mexico. But it says injection, drug use, and wound botulism. People who inject illicit drugs have a risk of getting wound botulism, a serious illness that can be life-threatening. Your risk of getting wound botulism increases if you inject illicit drugs, especially black tar heroin, under your skin or into your muscles. Wound botulism is a rare but serious illness that happens when a germ called Clostridium botulinum gets into a wound and makes a toxin. This toxin attacks your body's nerves, which can make it hard to breathe and can cause muscle weakness and even death. If you get wound botulism, you will need medicine called antitoxin. The antitoxin can stop the toxin from causing more harm, but it can't undo the damage already done. Boy, that sucks. Even after receiving antitoxin, you might need to stay in the hospital for several weeks or even months before you recover enough to go home. God dang, that sounds serious. Grimner, you're hilarious. Hey, Black Tar Matters. Don't start with me. Some of the symptoms you might have are double vision, blurred vision, drooping eyelids. Man, I have these already, and I don't even shoot tar heroin. Slurred speech, difficulty swallowing, a thick feeling tongue, dry mouth, and muscle weakness. As the disease gets worse, you may develop more symptoms such as difficulty breathing and paralysis. I guess that's right before you die, I guess. So the reason I brought that up is because they had new cases in New Mexico. And it says health officials in New Mexico are investigating two suspected cases. Now, it's just two, okay? Like this, like I said, it's not a giant issue or anything. Just kind of interesting that, you know, it's kind of shown up. And honestly, I can't even say that it's shown up all of a sudden. I mean, maybe they have two cases every couple months. I don't really know. But I just thought it was interesting that, you know, it has shown up in New Mexico. So it says they're investigating two suspected cases of wound botulism in residents with reported injection drug use. The state noted that two prior cases were reported in January, with cases primarily linked to injecting black tar heroin and methamphetamines. So there you go. All right, let's see here. Back to the top of the stack, see what I've missed, if I've missed anything. I don't know. Okay, I know this weekend a couple things we're doing. One is we're going to be trying to stay out of the rain tomorrow. I have a grandson coming over. Now, this is the youngest one. He is... He's the youngest grandson, but not the youngest grandchild. He is 5, and he's going to be spending the night tonight. That'll be fun. Of course, we're going to be grilling some steaks tonight. Well, actually, my favorite, pork steaks. I don't know what it is about pork, man, but I think I love pork more than any other meat. So we're going to be, you know what else we're going to do? We actually have artichokes here that we started a couple years ago, and this year that plant is just doing fantastic. There's so many artichokes out there. We already took like 4 or 6 off earlier this week and gave them away. And there's got to be 20 artichokes on 2 plants out there. So we're going to actually try grilling artichokes, which I've never done. I like artichokes, but it'll be interesting to see how they taste off the grill. So I'm going to do one. I'm going to do some just on the grill, and I'm going to do some in a pan with a very little bit of water in it and see how they taste like that. And you know, I kind of wanted to say something about food production, because we're actually kind of, even though we started ahead of the game in food production, now it seems like we're behind. Because I'm so dang tired of the deer getting our food. And last year we put fencing up, but we only had about 4 feet of solid fencing. By that I mean impenetrable by critters. And then we had about 3 feet of kind of looser, stranded fencing, actually, and even a hot wire. But here's the deal. Deer can jump really high. So, I mean, in Oregon, you got to go up about 8 feet of fence that they can't jump through. Because we had, like I said, 5 feet of fence. Actually, almost 6. And then 3 feet of strands, but they would just jump through the strands. That didn't bother them. An electric strand isn't going to do a damn thing if you're in the air. You can touch an electric stand as long as you're not touching the ground. An electric strand, I should have said. As long as you're not touching the ground, it's not going to do anything. Deer don't care. They just jump right through it. So we're a little bit behind. What is it, June? We'll still get plenty of food production. It'll come on fast, too. So we just got the upper level fencing up today. I think it's probably 7 feet. Yeah, probably 7 feet high. I'm hoping that that's going to be high enough. I probably ought to go 8. I know. But anyway, hey, I wanted to tell you guys something else. This is really kind of bizarre. Like, I actually have a unmanned aircraft pilot's license. I don't even know if you knew there was such a thing. But as it turns out, like, you can get this pilot's license, and it's a nice, really nice kind of federal ID. But I just did it because I just wanted to do it. And so I got this drone. My drone is probably, I don't know, a few hundred bucks. It wasn't $1,000, I know that. I'm pretty sure it wasn't. But, like, when I do these drone videos, it's so funny that people will see it and they want me to come and do, like, do videos for them. And they're willing to pay, which is kind of crazy. And actually, that's one of the reasons why I got that drone. It's unmanned aircraft pilot license. I don't know what it's called. But I kind of got it so because I was thinking about retiring from dentistry eventually, and I was thinking of some other things I could do, and I heard in real estate that they're using a lot of drones. So I was like, well, you know, not only in real estate, but actually, you know, some of these wind turbines, some power companies are hiring unmanned aircraft pilots to fly their drones up and do visual inspections of these big wind turbines. And they're actually in some railroad companies want, it saves them a lot of money to send somebody out with a drone and just videotape the track, the condition of the tracks and the track bed and the vegetation around the tracks. It's just like a lot easier to send somebody out with a drone who can capture it on video, and, you know, one person goes out and launches a drone, catches a video, and sends it back. Same with these wind turbines. I mean, it's a hell of a lot easier than climbing the damn turbine. I mean, you still, I know, are going to have to do some, you know, hands-on maintenance on those wind turbines, but you can get some visual feedback, you know, by launching a drone up there and getting that. Getting some video for them. But anyway, there's actually a lot of uses for unmanned aircraft pilots. And, you know, it's one of the things I was thinking. In the real estate world, I know you can actually kind of do a home inspection. And actually, home inspectors will hire drone pilots also because they don't actually have to go on the roof. You can actually just launch your drone, go up. You know, you can have the home inspector there with you. Ask them what they want video of, and you can just video whatever. And you can get your drone close enough that you get really detailed. Like, let's say you had a vent pipe coming out of the roof or whatever, either sewage or, you know, whatever, air, it doesn't matter. But you can get your drone close enough that you get really good footage of whether or not, you know, the roofing around it is sound, if it has any leaks or cracks, without actually being on the roof, you know, which I know is kind of dangerous. And, you know, you can do damage when you're walking on a roof. So it's kind of handy to be able to help other people out and, I mean, make money at the same time. I'm actually kind of thinking about getting a radio control car with a camera that you could stand in the crawl space, because, I mean, who likes going in crawl spaces, but they still need to be inspected, you know, visual inspection. You'd be able to do a lot of that remotely, which would be awesome. Anyway, that's going to do it for this week. I will be seeing you guys on Tuesday, because next week I am going hiking. It's going to be like 80 degrees on Friday next week. It'll be a much better weekend to go for a hike than this weekend, which yesterday was soaking wet. And my daughter gave me an out. She told me, you know, we don't have to go if you don't want to. And I was like, you know what? I love to hike, to be outdoors in the woods. You know, I'll hike in the rain, sure, but, you know, if I don't have to, I'd rather not. Anyway, you guys are awesome. I'll see you Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern time, and I won't see you next Saturday. Thanks so much for listening, and we are out of here.